You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode, the final regular season episode of the 2024-2025 Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you at NBA 2K25, and to see you through the finale of the regular season, which concludes on Sunday, but we ain't gonna have an episode on Sunday. It's myself, Bobozi, and NBA executive extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great, Mo. Man, Friday, the week flew by for us, man, but I've enjoyed every episode this week.
You know what they say? Time flies when you're battling for playoff seeding. And here we are.
You're right.
You know, some interesting games in the NBA last night. We saw a potential preview of a first round series between the Knicks and the Pistons. Obviously, that can change with the Pacers just one game behind the Knicks. And the Pistons have two games remaining against the Bucks. If they beat them in both, they can overtake them in the standings for the fifth seed. So, in a weird way, though, the Pistons and the Knicks could be the 3-6 matchup, or they could very easily be the 4-5 matchup. But what was your takeaway from last night? Because neither team rested their guys. They both came out and played. What did you make of it?
Tell you what, the Pistons can pose some problems for the Knicks in terms of matchups. You know, Cade Cunningham was exceptional last night, and he brings size to the point guard position. And like I mentioned to you yesterday, he's improved defensively. So he started out on Jalen Brunson. And then when Cade goes off of Jalen Brunson, you have Ron Holland and Asua Thompson. So Jalen, if it's a series against the Pistons, we'll be looking at 6'6 athletes the entire game, the entire series. And they're going to make him work. And, and it's going to be a different matchup for him, and then trying to find out who he can guard at the other end. So that's what I'm taking from it, because look, the Pistons have beat them 3 out of 4 times in the regular season now. So you could tell there was urgency on both sides, because both teams knew this potentially is going to be a first round matchup, and they wanted to send some sort of message. Now, the Knicks were without OG Anunoby and Josh Hart, two obviously very important parts of the team, but they had the two best players in the lineup in Towns and Brunson, had a lead of 13, but the Pistons, to their credit, walked them down in the especially in the fourth quarter, and they're going to be unafraid. The Pistons are a tough team too. They have a lot of toughness on this team, and I might give them the edge in terms of toughness, but I'm going to give the Knicks the edge in terms of experience. Has the makings to be a really long, drawn out series. To me, I don't see that series being anything close to any kind of sweep. I see a 6 or 7 game series if those two tangle up.
Well, the playoffs are a game of chess, right? Teams make their move, the other team makes adjustments, they make their move, the other team comes back and makes their adjustments. There aren't many adjustments you can make for increasing a player's height, which is the difficulty here for the Knicks having a best player who is a smaller point guard. However, we're going to preview every playoff series once those matchups are locked in. So next week, we'll get into previewing the playoff series that we have going on. But then we also have the play-in next week, where we will be here after every game breaking down what happens for you. But for today, to end the regular season, I thought it's only right we answer some questions from the people, because this is what we love to do. This is who the show is for. This is why we do this. We've got a couple questions in from our Discord server. Our resident troll, Mr. AG, says, what advice do you have for a non-athletic 5'10", 21-year-old who's trying to make the league in 2 years? Mr. AG, my advice for you, my brother, is just put the fries in the bag, bro. It's going to be very difficult for you at 21, 5'10", trying to make the league at 23. I don't see that happening, but crazier things have happened in the world. There's been some great players in the NBA that we've seen who have been undrafted and coming to the league at a later stage. But from what I know about AG's ball knowledge, being in our Discord community, you know, he thinks the Nets going to win a championship pretty soon. So I don't know where his Boswell IQ is. I'm a resident Nets fan, but I don't know where the Boswell IQ is. But Scott, do you have any advice for undersized players who are trying to improve their game?
Obviously, this is a game that rewards a lot of size and length currently and historically. And you have to be really special to be a smaller player to play in this league. You got to be super quick. You got to have exceptional ball handling. You have to have a tremendous IQ, and being able to shoot the basketball would go a long way to giving you a better opportunity. So if you don't have those skills, or haven't honed those skills at an elite level, it's going to be difficult to become an NBA player. But again, it's not for me to pour water on anybody's fire or their dreams. And if they want to go after it, all I can tell you is that you got to work so hard each and every day, countless hours, to even have a chance to get yourself recognized. So that's my advice.
You know what I think about when you know, people are asking about how to improve their game and stuff? A lot of people, they try and copy the best players in the game, right? So if you're an undersized guard, you might try and copy prime Isaiah Thomas or the other Isaiah Thomas or, you know, even Jalen Brunson, for example. But I think if you're an undersized guard, you should look at someone like TJ McConnell and try and copy his game, because the value that he brings in terms of being a pest on the defensive end, picking up full court, taking charges, those are the kind of things that are going to get you more minutes on the court. Obviously, the offense is a huge part of it. But if you can make sure that you're not a liability on the defensive side of the floor, that's the biggest thing for an undersized player when it comes to making a team, whether it's their high school team, their college team, whatever level they might want to play at. I think it's the intangibles. And oftentimes, modeling your game off the role players who have had to go through this arduous path because they haven't had the insane talent. Like, not everyone's going to shoot like Steph Curry, right? But picking up on those smaller details and the effort plays is the most important thing.
Great call, Mo. And it goes to what I was talking about earlier in terms of the work ethic. And TJ McConnell exemplifies that. Nobody outworks that young man. He's one of the hardest workers in the game. He has a lot of toughness, which is very important. He doesn't back down. He gets switched on to a guy 7, 8 inches taller than him. He's still going to give him a fight. And you can tell with a guy like TJ McConnell too, that got him in the league, those intangible qualities. But each and every year, he's improved his skill set too, because he had to be able to stay in the league as long as he's, you know, been able to play in the league now. His shooting has improved. His ball handling has improved. I always thought he was a real sound student of the game when he was playing at Arizona in college, and his work ethic and toughness are still intact. Believe he has some leadership with him. But good call in terms of modeling your game after a role player. Because look, let's face it, the special players usually have shown themselves earlier in life or earlier in their work due to, you know, whether it's extreme athleticism, size, skill, whatever the case may be.
And there's only 10, 15, maybe 20 star players in the league. There's 450 guys in the league. The rest of them are role players. So, you know, you got to play the odds at some point. We got a question from the UK Boston Celtics fans. They say, if the Celtics go back to back, where would this rank the current Celtics teams amongst all-time great Celtics teams?
Great question, Bo. I really like that question. And that's the... I'm gonna take my stab at it because I have tremendous respect for the Celtics tradition. Ironically, Mo, I don't know if you know this, but on HBO the past couple of months, they're running this Celtics, is it called?
Not only do I know this, but you can go to our channel and you can watch an exclusive interview with the director and the showrunner who produced that series, where I give you my insights as well, because I got early access to watch it. And Celtics City is what it's called.
Celtics City is one of the best documentaries
from an unbiased perspective. The jumper I'm wearing. It is an absolutely amazing series to watch.
It is an amazing series. And I have to be honest, I've watched every episode now. I had to catch up at the first. I didn't watch it when it first came out. I was like, Celtics City. Well, okay, what are we talking about? But once I dove into it and the way they not only have, you know, chronicled the greatness of the franchise, but all of the other social issues that were going in and around Boston and the perception of the city of Boston. And you got this team and, you know, going back to the time of Bill Russell and Red Auerbach. It was a great reminder for me, number one, because I knew a lot of that stuff. But then also I've learned a few things about the Celtics franchise. Now, back to our question from our audience. I would rank this team because given this era now, we haven't had a repeat champion in the league currently since the Golden State Warriors, correct?
Kevin Durant Warriors.
And that was, we're talking, what, 15, 16? 16, 17?
17, 18.
17, 18,
and
yeah.
And then Toronto won it in 19 where they were trying to
Right, them. Yeah, okay. So the fact that there's been a new champion every year, and if this team can rise up and win back-to-back during this era where there's probably more parity than at any time, at least, you know, when the Celtics were winning those 10, 11 titles with Bill Russell, and that's not to take anything away from them, but back then you kind of knew it was a collision course between the Lakers and the Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then the Warriors would step in there, or Philadelphia with when Wilt Chamberlain was there. So, you know, different setup, not as many teams. So you would have to, I don't know that I would rank this team above like the Bird, McHale, Paris Celtics. But then they would be in the conversation after that group, to me, among the great Celtics teams. Because, again, to do it in this era, this team is deep, very versatile at both ends of the floor. There's a lot to like about this group. And the way they go about their business in terms of every game, just being prepared, they're workmanlike. They never get too high, never get too low. Remind you of some of the other great Celtics teams. So not ready to put them ahead of the Bird group, but then to me, they're in the conversation with all the other teams. And look, the one team that won with Garnett and those guys, they had a lot of talent on that group.
Mm-hmm. That team never lost a playoff series when healthy.
Yeah, that was an extremely talented group. That probably was a more talented group than this team. But they weren't able to go back to back. If this team is able to go back to back, you got to give them the edge because of that.
There's also a part two to that question as John Mazzulla tries to guide this team. They want to know, why are all these coaches getting fired so close to the playoffs?
Well, that's going to remain a mystery because I can't really answer that question. Truthfully,
I don't think anyone can.
It was a surprise. Exactly, because it was a surprise to all of us. And again, it goes to the point that you've heard me make a lot on this show. When you're not in the locker room, you're not in the building of an organization, you do not really know what the day-to-day relationships are like, what the culture is like, what the interactions among all of the key principles, starting with president, GM, and head coach. So when you're not privy to what's going on there, you really don't know. All I can say is suggest for it to happen like this, it had to be something that ownership felt was so bad at the time that they felt like, okay, we can't waste another day, that we have to make this decision now. What that is, obviously they have to answer to that, but that's, from afar, that's about as deep as I can get into the question, because you don't see this. I can't recall ever seeing this in my 23, 24 years in the NBA, something happening like that less than a week before the playoffs start, and a very successful team, franchise. You know, that's so that makes it all the more kind of puzzling. Had it happened in the offseason, would not have been obviously surprised. So we see that all the time. So
we've got a really good question here from Big Con. And he says, for the top eight teams in the West, which team would have the biggest upheaval in the summer if they were knocked out in the play-in or the first round of the playoffs? Now, we can go through this team by team.
The biggest upheaval?
Yeah, the biggest change to their roster. So right now, currently in eighth is the Timberwolves. If they lose in the play-in or they lose in the first round, I don't know if we see a huge upheaval because Anthony Edwards will still be their guy.
No.
You know, the only change might be a Julius Randle or Dante DiVincenzo, who they acquired this season. But I don't see that being an upheaval of that team.
Mm-mm.
Above them, you've got the Grizzlies, who have already made some sort of upheaval firing Taylor Jenkins. And there was a lot of rumors around Ja Morant potentially being moved this summer. However, the way that they're playing now with the new coach, the new style of play, like Zach Edey is saying, three times the amount of ball screens he was saying before they changed coaches. Ja Morant is hitting shots and bringing out new celebrations to entertain everyone with every game. Do you see a big upheaval for the Grizzlies if they lose in the play-in, don't even make it to the playoffs?
I can see that. I really can. I could see an upheaval there because, look, okay, you get rid of the coach, and if you still get bumped out of the playoffs, you don't even make it into the playoffs. You don't even get out of the play-in round. You've had this roster together now for a few years.
Yeah, but they've never been healthy.
No, I get that, but that's an issue too. When you say when
You don't want to end
you're
up like
talking about
Philly.
never be healthy, exactly, right? So you do you come back with everybody the same, hoping that everybody's going to be healthy for the first time when that hasn't been the case? I think that put it this way, they have to be open to making some major changes. Let's put it that way. In my opinion, Memphis would if they don't make it into the playoff round, even to the first round. I would see, that's what I see. Because again, they may just made this their change with the coach just a couple weeks ago. There's gotta be some deeper things other than just the coach and his relationship with the current GM there. There's gotta be something that's amiss if they're not able to make it into the field of eight. So in my opinion, I would look for some change on that Memphis roster.
Okay, the Warriors, I think even if they lose, they kind of stand pat because they've made their big move for Jimmy Butler. I don't think
Yes.
anything drastic is coming. The Clippers, I
No.
don't think Steve Ballmer's
No.
unhappy with his group the way he talks about them.
No.
The Nuggets, currently fourth, if they have to lose in the first round, what do you see that looking like this summer? Because apparently Jokic, according to the reports, is expressing his frustrations. Jamal Murray, if you move off him, this is kind of an all-time low stock to move Jamal Murray. Same with Michael Porter Jr. It would be tough to move those guys, what the market looks like for them and their contracts. But do you see a major upheaval coming for the Nuggets if they are eliminated this summer?
Well, a lot is going to have to do with the new leadership team that comes in there. Who's going to be the new general manager of the Nuggets? What's his vision for this basketball team? Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, whoever that may be, the vision is going to be with Nikola Jokic still in the Denver Nuggets uniform. After that, I would imagine that you're going to, whoever that may be, is going to take a look and make an assessment of the complete roster, try to figure out what they can add to enhance Nikola Jokic's abilities and enhance his opportunity to compete for another title. That is going to be the task at hand. So it's a little difficult to say with the Nuggets just because you don't know who the new leader is going to be. But again, the only thing I can say close to a certainty that new leader is going to figure it out with Nikola Jokic in uniform, and everything else can be up for discussion.
Well, the Lakers are sitting at third. If they're to lose in the first round, I don't see a major upheaval. They've already got Luka, their piece for the future. They've already got LeBron. They're not going to move off LeBron. They're not going to move Bronny. But one thing was interesting watching the Lakers Mavs game. After the game, the mic picked up Luka telling Daniel Gafford, "We'll play again," as in they're going to play together again. So I looked at it and I'm like, Daniel Gafford is making 14 million next year on an expiring contract. So I don't think there'll be an upheaval, but I definitely do see a
No.
world where the Lakers try and sign Daniel Gafford to fill their gap at the center spot.
Well, Luka knows already, having played there now for a couple of months, and they tried to do it at the deadline right after they traded for him. They need a big man. They need a center. They need a reliable starter at that center position. So that's what I would expect. And again, you've heard me say this many times, Mo. The playoffs really allow executives and organizations to take a real honest, objective look of where they're at. And it crystallizes for you the needs for your team moving forward if your goal is to eventually win a championship. So the Lakers, we know, are one of those organizations that are in that bucket of always trying to figure out how to win a championship. And so my guess is they will figure out a way to add a starting caliber center to this roster, regardless of how they finish. Even if they were to go to the finals, they know they're going to need a big man somewhere along the way.
Laker fans do this thing online where they Photoshop all the best players into a Lakers jersey and they say soon. And I used to laugh at that until they got Luka Doncic. And now I realize all of my nightmares can come true. So with Luka and his best friend in the league being Nikola Jokic and what's happening in Denver right now, that is my biggest nightmare, is the Lakers somehow getting Jokic. Luckily, he's on a max contract up until 2028. So
Good luck with that one.
yeah, we don't have to worry about that for
Okay.
now. However,
Exactly.
he can hit free agency in 2 seasons' time, turn down his player option, and when LeBron retires, they could replace him with Nikola Jokic. So, yikes. But the Houston Rockets, second seed, if they lose in the first round, I feel like they're playing with house money. I don't think there's a major upheaval. What I do think, though, is they have Fred VanVleet's contract. They have a lot of picks. They could go out there and make a move. Someone in our Discord server who joined yesterday came in and said that it was Shoeberryness, a UK-based Houston fan, says that they could trade Fred VanVleet's contract option, Jalen Green, and the Suns' picks for Devin Booker. So I don't know if I see that necessarily happening, although that's something that I've thought about throughout the season. But they could go out there and acquire a star player because they have the financial flexibility and the assets to do it.
Well, I know we talked about Kevin Durant even there as a possibility a few weeks ago. No, I definitely don't see an upheaval because this team is ahead of schedule. A lot of great young talent on there. And what people are talking about heading into the playoffs as you analyze this team is who's going to be the guy who can put the ball in the basket in time of need in crunch time, that most pundits are saying that they really that the Rockets don't have that player on their roster who can consistently do that. Again, let's get in the playoffs and find out if that still rings true or does somebody emerge in that position. So we know Sengun can play and score along on the block from the perimeter. Is there a player where Jalen Green theoretically is supposed to fill that role? He hasn't been consistent in that yet. Let's see if he continues to grow and ascend. And nobody knows better than Ime Udoka and the staff down there at Houston because they get a chance to watch him play every day and practice and all the games and analyze him and have a feel if Jalen Green is on the trajectory to be consistently become that guy. Maybe he is. But I do think they also have a budding star in Amen Thompson. So whatever they do moving forward, I fully expect him to be a big part of that ball club moving forward and them being one of the top teams in the Western Conference for a while.
That brings us to the number one seed Thunder, who have had a historically good regular season. And you think with a team this good, they've got so many great young players that they wouldn't be in line for a major upheaval. However, I have kind of a hot take. I don't know if it's a hot take, but if they do lose in the first round of the playoffs this year after having another fantastic regular season, could we see Sam Presti dip into his war chest of a million draft picks, go out there and acquire a star player who's unhappy in their situation, perhaps a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a player of that caliber to join this roster, because they do have some very attractive trade pieces if they were to be put on the trade block after a potential first round exit.
To me, a lot depends on how the team performs in the playoffs. Like in your example, if they get knocked out, when is that? Is that a first round knockout?
Yeah,
Or is
we're
that a
talking about in the
knockout in
first
the
round.
Western Conference?
We're talking about the
Okay.
first round.
In the first round, I still don't see Sam and that group going into any type of panic mode because they're a very young team still. Even though they've ascended to the top of the conference and they were there last year. And the expectations have grown a great deal. And it would be an extreme disappointment, I'm sure, first and foremost in their building, but in the basketball community at large, if this team were to get knocked out in the first round, at minimum, the expectation for them this season is that they get to the conference finals.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the floor for this group. So if they were to get bounced, no, I still don't see a panic. Would there be a tweak here or there considered? Well, I'm sure of that. But maybe do you add a little more size or shooting to the roster or another dynamic player who can really score the ball to take some of the heat off of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Again, a lot would depend on how each of these games unfold in the series. So that they can make the proper determination on what type of player would be needed to add. And that's, to your point, they have a luxury of being able to do that because they do have a ton of draft picks and ability and some good players on the roster that they could trade out to get somebody that they deem maybe a little bit better. But when it's all said and done, I expect to see pretty much the same roster for this team moving forward.
And I think it's worth bearing in mind for teams like this that winning the championship is the ultimate goal. But mm-hmm. just because you don't win the championship, it doesn't mean you should blow up the team. Because if we look at the reigning champions, the Celtics, they say they came so close to winning mm-hmm. every year, conference finals, before they actually got it, and credit to the Celtics organization for keeping their guys together. Whereas this Thunder team, though, the one thing I will say is they've not got any real playoff experience with the exception of what happened last year. So maybe this is a year where they go and take that experience, maybe so on and so forth. However, with the young players, it's great that you've got them all now, but as time progresses, you're going to have to pay all the young guys. And as time progresses, you're going to have to pay the luxury tax for those young guys. And we know Oklahoma City as a market isn't as financially set up to sustain that because we saw what happened with James Harden back when they were in a similar situation where they made it to mm-hmm. the NBA finals and then they had to move off one of their core pieces. So although, you know, you don't want to blow up a young team. And I know Shai is kind of the same age as Tatum, and Tatum had far more playoff experience mm-hmm. at the same point in his career. But you don't want to blow up a young team, but you have to recognize the market that they're in, the situation that they find themselves in, and how many years can you consistently keep trying to make runs at this?
No question. I mean, you mentioned the Celtics too, Mo. They kept knocking at the door, getting to conference finals. They weren't getting bumped in the first round.
Yeah.
And then they were finally adding a Kristaps Porzingis to that mix was key
mm-hmm.
because he brought more shooting, brought more size and some rim protection to that group. And during that run, which you have to credit them for, and OKC is poised to do the same thing, a lot of young players that you can develop to get better. Luke Kornet has improved during that run to now he's a reliable rotational player. Sam Hauser, same thing. Potential sixth man of the year, Peyton Pritchard, same thing. So that is to me the key in where we're at in the game today. Along the way, when you're making these runs, and you're normally making runs with veteran players or guys with experience, you have to find a way to develop some of the youth on your team so that can allow you to sustain an ability to be good and can have some contributors there on a lower contract because everybody on your roster can't make $40, $50 million. You got a couple, two or three of those guys on the roster and everybody else now, you're going to be making a lot less money. So you have to find value for your championship roster. And that's where scouting, development, all those kind of things come into play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that is another week here at the Hoop Genius Podcast. Final week of the regular season. I can't believe how quickly the regular season has gone. And mm-hmm. the play-in's almost here and the playoffs are almost here. And I cannot wait. Do you have any predictions for how that Western Conference is going to shake out in terms of the seeding? The top three are locked in. 9 and 10 are locked in. So 4 and 8. Could be anything. There's one game separating them.
They lost me last night because the Timberwolves won. So I expected them to move up, but they stayed at 8.
Yeah.
behind the Grizzlies who had the same record. So I think because they all have the same record I believe it's Golden State.
Yep,
They
47
have
and
the same
33 for the
record.
Warriors, Grizzlies, and Timberwolves, and then 48 and 32
And
for the Nuggets and Clippers.
So it's, there's something in those tiebreakers when those three teams are tied like that, that Minnesota falls back to eight. Now, Minnesota has two of the easier games remaining, I believe. Golden State, who I know the Clippers are at Sacramento tonight.
The
But
Warriors were at
they're
the
a game
Trailblazers,
before.
but then they faced the Clippers on that game on Sunday, 8:30 UK
That
time,
game
by
on
the way.
Sunday will decide a lot. Yeah,
That game
that
on
will
Sunday may
determine
decide who's fifth and who's sixth,
six.
potentially.
Yes. And Memphis has another tough game, I believe, right?
Memphis have got to face the Nuggets, and then they've got to
Yes.
face the Mavericks. And the Nuggets have got to face the Grizzlies and the Rockets. But I think with the Rockets resting their guys on the final game of the season, I think the Nuggets should win that.
Yeah, because the Nuggets are what?
48-32, they're fourth
yeah,
right
well,
now.
The Lakers just need to win, what, one more game to secure third, right?
Yeah, I think they're locked into that.
Are you sure they're locked
well,
in, or
they're
they have to
locked
win one
into
more?
they're locked into not being in the play-in.
Oh no, I know the Lakers.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
yeah.
But I'm saying, but
Oh,
they
for the
want,
third
but for the
seed?
Lakers,
Yeah.
the Lakers want to, to me, they want to secure that third seed now, because now, you know, obviously they're gonna have home court in the first series, and they'll be on the opposite bracket of OKC. Even though they play well against OKC here in recent times, but you'd probably like to face the number one seed in the championship round if you can, you can help.
Yeah, so. Ooh, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to see how it unfolds, and then we'll be back next week breaking down the play-in tournament and the matchups that we have ready for the first round. Scott, I appreciate you being here all week long. It is much appreciated by myself and the listeners, so thank you. And
enjoyed it, man. Enjoy it every time I'm on here, Mo.
Yes, sir.
So,
yes, sir.
Great. Thanks for having me too.
Anytime. You're part of the family now. So let's enjoy the weekend, the finale of the regular season. See how these games match up. That Warriors Clippers matchup on Sunday is going to be must see TV. We'll catch you guys next week. Subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. And until next time, get buckets.